Hello, everybody. Mark Carlson here, SNEA Technical Council Chair. Welcome to the STC Podcast. Every week, the STC Podcast presents important technical topics to the developer community. Each episode is hand-selected by the SNEA Technical Council from the presentations at our annual Storage Developer Conference. The link to the slides is available in the show notes at snea.org/podcast. You are listening to SDC Podcast, Episode 2. Today we hear from Paul Von Behren, software architect with Intel, as he presents Managing the Next Generation Memory Subsystem from the 2015 Storage Developers Conference.
My name is Paul Von Behren. I'm at Intel, and I'm going to talk about managing memory and a lot of new concepts. I'm not going to get into a lot of detail. I won't have any XML dumps on the slides or you know, the normal stuff that makes most people scared of management software. It's kind of conceptual, but trying to set up why things are changing, right? Why this is more interesting. Traditionally, you don't manage memory. It's just there. It has capacity. That's about it. It's getting a lot more interesting for... Okay. All right, gotta get rid of this. Hold on. How's that? Better? I normally work on the programming model side of things. The architect that's been doing our manageability software at Intel did a lot of this work, pretty well put together the slides himself. But he accepted a new job a few weeks ago and is in training this week. So I'm presenting on his behalf, but I was involved with reviews and working on the work that we had done. So what I'm going to do is talk about memory technologies, things that are coming up that change the picture. This includes NVDIMMs, but some other things as well. Concepts and practices for the next generation memory, and emerging management standards, open source code, documentation. And emerging is a big word here, because we're just getting started. We're trying to get some things in place, trying to get some understanding. We're also looking for feedback, so particularly the operating system vendors, the NVDIMM vendors, management software vendors. This is the opportunity we'd like for people to get involved in the discussion. So let's talk about memory technologies and management. What kind of use cases are there? So first off, we'll talk about the current way of doing things. What do we know about processor cache? Not a lot. It's pretty transparent. We know how much is there. We know some information about what's being dedicated per core, but for the most part, you don't really manage it. It's just there. There's also the memory related to. I can't even read my laptop here. Let me scoot around here. Memory controllers, channels, SLIMs, slots, and DIMMs. This becomes a little bit more important because of NUMA locality, but again, for a lot of applications, they don't really care at all. Also, BIOS interleave, you frequently need to set this up in the BIOS. It can be very confusing. There's frequently a range of settings, including, I don't want to think about it. frequently one of the BIOS options, just because in a lot of cases, let the hardware do the best thing is the right answer. But it becomes more interesting as we have different kinds of memory moving forward. Memory and channel clock speed, which is the speed of installed memory. There's information about that's available now. Typically, it doesn't get in your way, but typically the changes in speeds across different kinds of DIMM in any particular system is relatively small. And again, we're talking about potentially larger differences now that become more important to manage. The redundancy, rank sparing, mirroring. A lot of people don't realize this, but high-end servers allow RAID-like features of memory. They have for a while. If you have the cache to fully populate very high-end servers and make your capacity divided in half, you'll be very interested in the mirroring features. So it's not available in all that many systems and not a lot of people using it, but those that do value it very much. Another level of redundancy for certain types of computing is always critical. Mentioned here SSD cache for HDDs. So we've been talking about the role of persistent memory. We're not necessarily, in this case, thinking specifically about SSDs, but the way SSDs work as a cache now, we see being, you know, growing into use of persistent memory in the future. I've got this notation here, NVDIM N, and I have a couple other NVDIM hyphen somethings that are coming up. JEDEC is a big force in DIMMs. They are there, you know, the standardization at the hardware level around DIMMs. They have announced interest in supporting new NVDIM standards. As far as I know, they are not quite released yet, but there has been quite a bit of information out. And by the way, my understanding is they'll be released real soon now. So we can expect more on this. But there's been a lot of information, like Flash Memory Summit and some of the other SNEA events. So I'll be using their terminology just because it's kind of helpful to have names to talk about these different classes of NVDIMMs. So the one is non-volatile memory created by combining volatile and non-volatile media with the power source, the non-volatile typically today being flash. What you see in terms of your software activity is DRAM speeds, triggering mechanisms like ADR. This is the Intel asynchronous. Is it DRAM or device? I'm not even going to try. It's a mechanism to trigger a flush of the volatile memory into flash because there's a power down situation going on. There's platform support, BIOS support that makes NVDIMM ends work. There are standards that are put in place very recently that allow the operating system to tell the difference between different types of DIMMs. There is interleave separately from DRAM, it has features much like typical DRAM features for interleaving, but it's being handled differently. That doesn't make any sense to interleave volatile and non-volatile DIMMs. So they have different rules. Again, a opportunity for management software. I mentioned BIOS is uniquely identifying the different types. The kind of use cases for this, flash-backed DRAM hardware, how to trigger the save, how to trigger the restore. This is mostly transparent, but sometimes there's hooks into the power supplies or power source to specifically manage this or at least tune it. Monitor save and restore status. You can understand what the condition is at any moment. Monitor energy source, flash health, save readiness. So it's a lot of diagnostic type of data, but for the access to from the operating system perspective, it's basically treated like volatile memory, other than the fact that it can, these management cases. Standard NVDIMM use cases apply as well. So these are the kind of things we touched on in the previous supply. They're even mostly common to DIMMs. You want to be able to replace a failed DIMM, update firmware, and decommission, erase sensitive persistent content. Now that's a very new persistent memory concept. Since volatile memory didn't hold data, you really didn't have to worry about this. It's becoming a huge issue around persistent memory. So. The next type that JEDEC has classified and are in the market now are NVDIMMs that act like block devices, basically SSDs. It's a DIMM form factor, custom BIOS, uniquely identifies block NVDIMM F capability in the system address map. So this is the information that the BIOS provides to the operating system about the topology of the hardware. So they identify the stuff so the operating system doesn't try to use it for volatile memory, realizes it's a different access approach. It coexists with DRAM. Some system DRAM may be used for caching. It's another characteristic of this. Sometimes they're taking part of the standard system memory. Sometimes they use the DRAM is on the NVDIMF chips, DIMMs themselves. Custom driver presents the DIMMs as standard block devices to the operating system. better than SSD performance. That's the really, you know, one of the big factors here, the benefits is the performance. The other is it's transparent. Everybody knows how to do, you know, file systems do I/O to disks, work exactly the same with these. The kind of use cases that come up are monitor flash, spareware, and other drive. You know, they're using smart, you know, sometimes with variations as smart tends to be. But, you know, providing data on the health of the device. Standard block device partitioning formatting. These are your operating system, you know, management. Built, you know, built-in features, but they still apply. Software RAID can be used with these kinds of devices. Standard NVDIMM use cases apply as well. Update firmware, decommission, erase sensitive data, and backing up the data. You know, in the case of the flashbacked NVDIMMs, you didn't have to worry about backup because they you know, it was just a they had the built-in backup capability. With these, you would back up the data just like you would any other block device. NVDIMP, this is proposed. My understanding is this not going to be used in the upcoming JEDEC standards, but trying to capture this idea of it's a combination of non-volatile memory, fast enough for direct memory controller access. That's what I use the MC all over the place because I'm running out of space here. That's the memory controller, directly accessible DRAM and NAND. So it has persistent media capabilities as well. They're recognized as persistent media. It's not just a transparent backup. Near DRAM speeds, directly accessed by memory controller. Very large capacities may include multi-mode capable, byte and/or block addressable. So. Multi-mode capable starts to throw a big wrinkle in the world of manageability. Rather than the management stack thinking just in terms of monitoring and reporting what's there, if you know, the device provides the ability to let the administrator make choices, now in addition to passive management reporting, you have to have active management. The administrator gets to make choices here. So this becomes a much more complicated and interesting management problem here. So I just wanted to touch out, that's a you know, kind of lost in the paragraph there, but that's a very key concept. The BIOS uniquely identifies volatile, non-volatile memory regions. I mentioned this before and how the information about the memory topology is reported. So the use cases here are you can configure RAS and performance characteristics via the BIOS. You can configure block and direct access devices via driver. So in, traditionally, if you had any choices about your memory configuration, like interleaving, you really could only do them from the BIOS. The standards are being extended to a point where the possibility of having software control over some but not all of these characteristics. And we figured it's a pretty drastic shift to reduce the size of volatile memory for a management command on a running system. But increasing it might not be too bad, and changing whether it's byte or block addressable, unused persistent memory shouldn't be an impact either. So there's a subset of configuration changes you can make to your memory configuration on a live system. And again, many of the previous use cases apply. Replace a failed interleave DIMM, update firmware, and we never get away from decommissioning, erasing sensitive data. No. So these are the types of things that complicate the memory management problem. I touched on this a little bit before, and I should just expand. NUMA is, if you're not familiar, is the affinity of you get better performance of using memory that's local to a socket for processes that are running on cores on that socket. There's
in the case of both DRAM and flash. Is there any concern about the reliability and the endurance between those two technologies? I know DRAM has very good endurance.
There is likely to be differences in endurability characteristics of this NVDIMMs. It really depends on the types of technology being used, but yes, there are issues there. In terms of the management software, being able to monitor things and you know get statistics and see, you know, to some extent, you know, a lot of what's being considered is very close to what's being done with SSDs. So it's a somewhat known problem, but it's a new management issue for memory. So. Yes?
Isn't keeping the hands off the memory controller and letting the hardware figure it out directly at odds with NUMA? We did a test where we wrote some really high performance code.
Right.
Using a conventional programming model called OpenCL. We ran it on two sockets. We ran it on one socket. We actually got better performance on a single socket.
Right. And sometimes it depends on the nature of your software. You may be able to predict things. Also, operating systems will, if you can set up and configure how the NUMA configuration is being used, or how an application is tied into it. So you can say, I'm setting things up so that the memory for this and the active processes are all tied to a specific core. If you don't do that, then you have a choice between the operating system Monte Carlo choices versus the hardware's choices if you say you want to use YUMA. And having the hardware make guess at it might be the right answer. So yeah, it can be tricky. Right now, NUMA really seems to be a HPC feature. That's where you get the most use of it. They're more interested in that fine-grained control. For most applications, like I said, letting the server run in UMA mode might be the best choice. So, and it's certainly the most common choice, as far as I can tell. So. All right, I was done with that slide. Oh, I was talking about NUMA. The other thing that's being introduced now, which is another memory management use case, is that HPC-oriented memory CPUs are now introducing in-package or on-package memory, which is basically soldered to the CPU with today's NUMA configurations, there's a performance penalty if you go off socket. With some of these HPC configurations, you can't go off. You can go off socket to standard DRAM, but a different socket can't get to another one's in package memory. So now you have another type of behavior that, again, mostly HPC applications have to be aware of. So there's work being done on providing libraries that can combine information about the topology of the system, understanding of the types of memory, and be able to help software make policy decisions about where it's what regions of memory should it avoid if it has certain goals. That's one of the things that Doug was talking about, this open source library. We've taken some of the software we had for fake volatile memory over persistent memory and are working it into a common library so that there's a single place that applications can go and get some of this information.
Does this library allow explicit programmer control of where to place the memory? Or you placed your data on the memory hierarchy?
Yeah, yes.
So it's kind of moving towards the memory flow at the moment. Memory flow
at
the
DME moment. Yeah. Hopefully it's a little more flexible than that, but your application to get the most performance will take advantage of this. And like I said, right now that tends to be HPC software. So, yes.
Can I ask these different modes? How amenable are they to things like DMA and RDMA? So we have NVDIMM, the three different flavors. Is there any comment on how we might push and pull data into those IO devices?
The NVDIMM F is a block device, so Right. So, that's being handled differently. DMA should work with the byte addressable persistent memory part. Exactly how this rolls out relative to the hardware is still a little bit unclear, because when you're acting like a block device, or part of your capacity is acting like a block device and part of it's acting like memory, it's not really quite sure what the right answer is.
When you do a DMA, you don't necessarily know if the cache is
got flushed
and stuff.
Right. No. Any other questions? Yes.
Do you expect to have regions of the cache lockable, like programmer control? Instead of just doing cache line, just do a chunk of the cache, explicitly lock and explicitly evict. So this would make it easier to be able to move data in, right? So there's a whole bunch of compiler optimizations you can do by hand if you really care. In my world, I really care, so it's like the optimizations. So if you think of multi-level caches, what we're talking, right? To just have different sizes. So if we're doing like cache blocking at every level, one of the things that'd be nice is if you could just lock the whole chunk and then programmatically. Do you expect these kinds of memory systems to have that kind of capability of not just a line, but a block?
I think what is done at times to achieve that is to make sure that the application's requirements are met by the hardware and not have anything ever move. So, and this is common in dedicated systems that are doing one thing. So if you basically have one application or one service, there's a little memory left over for the operating system and the application gets everything else, then it knows, doesn't have to worry about memory moving around. But in terms of hardware support, I'm not sure. No. Yes?
Yeah, on your memory management use case, you show that the NVM can actually place a build dim in a iterative mode. But it doesn't say anything about external energy source, like a super cap. Is there plans to move forward with that? Or?
Which one is that?
You can provide to the type N or the type F or the type, or actually the type B. Type N does have super cap currently.
Right.
Or I'm wondering, and it has management software to detect that. I'm just wondering going forward, is that going to be supported? And who owns the management software?
I'll get to that. Who owns it soon? In just a couple slides here. In terms of the super cap, That's something that's interesting from a management point of view. A lot of it's pretty opaque right now or vendor specific, and that's one of the other challenges here. But that's true with all devices. I think the management solutions will be a combination of what can be done generically across a variety of vendor solutions, along with the vendor specific stuff. So, I think that's common for in just about any kind of hardware device. There's a little bit of each, but I believe that SuperCap. I've seen some of the Java work, JEDEC work. It's as far as I know, it's not publicly available, and I shouldn't be speaking too much about it, other than what they talked about it at Flash Memory Summit. But I don't recall seeing that they were too specific about the power source information. I think that. Other than they're also talking about some manageability interfaces, this would be something else that could be monitored if the vendor wanted to provide that. So, but I don't think that they were necessarily describing exactly what had to be there. So next generation memory concepts, and what we're anticipating for the next generation. Memory is not a monolithic resource. I've mentioned this. There are different kinds of memory. They have different features, different quality of service, different characteristics. So traditionally, memory has been treated as a monolithic resource. Even though NUMA has been in place for quite a while on systems, there's an awful lot of software around manageability that knows nothing about NUMA. These are a variety of things that are kind of forcing us to think about a change in the way we approach memory. So that's probably the biggest takeaway. multiple types of devices plugged into the memory bus. Devices may coexist or require their own channel. They may work cooperatively or may be segregated. BIOS recognizes distinct device characteristics. Management tools need to differentiate memory types and manage accordingly. So the slightly different issues between management software and you know, applications that are using the data, but some of the stuff overlaps. And you know, it's just I expect to see more and more awareness of these differences and how to you know, react to issues and also to optimize. Configuration required. I mentioned this earlier that what's bubbling up soon is memory systems, NVDIMM type systems that have different types of capabilities, and the administrator can make choices. Volatile versus persistent, interleaved, mirrored sets, those kinds of choices that you would have. Block access, byte access, cooperative relationships, that was, NUMA affinity being the main one, but there can be other kinds of relationships that you may want to be aware of. Constraints, topology restrictions, operating system support, workload requirements, and the workload requirements really ties into the ability to make choices around the types of you know, configurations choices that you have with NVDIMMs. So Andy talked about cases where the block addressable pseudo SSDs is the best way existing applications work. This may be a good starting point. As evolutions get smarter about working with the persistent memory model, you should be able to get better performance with a PMEM aware application with PMEM hardware. And so you think there'll be transitions of times where, you know, the new version of the database starts supporting PMEM and you can, you know, switch over your hardware.
Is it possible that the use of persistent memory would simplify the amount of devices on the memory bus?
At this point, it doesn't seem like it, but it may not make things worse, but it certainly opens the opportunity for things to get pretty complicated. I mean, there's been a real significant attempt to allow different kinds of devices to be used on the memory device on the memory bus with NVDIMMs, which adds some complications, and particularly population rules. It was touched on one of the previous slides there. You know, things have to be on the same channel, or they must be on different channels, and you know, there's things like that you have to be aware of. So, all right, moving on. Persistent handles. So the idea here is, you know, similar to other kinds of devices. There'll be ways that names for the persistent memory devices. You may not be able to use them one by one. It's really kind of a choice of between the operating system, driver design, and hardware choices. But you're going to have something, just like with block devices, things that look like file names that are actually representative of names of devices. So for the DAX work that's in Linux, the PMEM devices or namespaces that are discovered are, you know, just a dev PMEM0, PMEM1, PMEM2. So it's a very simple namespace. And then on top of that, you mount a PMEM-aware file system, and then you have, you know, names that you can set for the files that represent the blobs of persistent memory that get used by applications. So file systems and the drivers support exactly this type of behavior for other resources, you know, very similar to what you see with disks. May be able to allocate and label a region of persistent memory. So in some cases, we expect PMEM, you know, the NVDIMM devices, just the capacity you get for a device is exactly the capacity of one DIMM. Or maybe all of them, offer them into one. But there's, I'll mention it a little later in a little more detail, ACPI standard NFIT that provides a way for basically a separation of those, kind of similar to the way that storage arrays will allow you to configure a blob of stuff together at the RAID level and then divide it up into a bunch of virtual logical units. Deallocation, when done, modify if needed. The options are there. They may or may not apply to the technology. Data management needed. Persistence creates reliability, serviceability, and security concerns. Interleaving NVDIMMs complicates failure domains. If you've worked with servers that you needed to worry about interleaving what's there, it's already complicated. So this makes it even more so. So. Yes, Tom.
I was curious, you talked about the secure erasing the data, but you're also looking at maybe a self-encryption as a function as well, especially for the...
Yeah, we've been, you know, the need for something is very clear. The right answer is a little bit unclear. We've started some discussions in the NVM programming twig and SNIA of, if hardware provided 10 encryption keys for NVDIMM, would that be enough? You know, consider, you know, you're running 20,000 containers on your server. Is 10 keys enough? Does that even make sense to think that way? You know, are there going to be niche cases where you absolutely need one or zero, but you probably couldn't take advantage of more than that? Is software encryption the right answer? So it's a lot of considerations. We're just kind of getting started with that, but that really wasn't a primary concern of the twig when we got started. But the more you start thinking about this, is something really need to have an answer for, you know, as an industry.
When so the power goes up, the data doesn't go away.
Right. Andy had all those pictures of Core. I remember when I got out of college and went to Sperry. I was immediately swallowed up into Unisys. Had a beta customer that was having all kinds of funky problems with their storage with torn writes. What a totally new concept. And I had to debug with somebody who's at the Air Force. It's great to have a highly confidential site as a beta customer. He had to basically get censored. He had to have intelligence people in the room with him before he could answer my questions on the phone. And they needed a quiet place to work, so they used a room that was originally built for the Core memory. They'd have a power loss in the data center. They'll grab all the Core memory out of the servers and lock it up in this concrete vault. And it was like a panic room. So that's where he called me from. At the time, it was just where you hang out and had coffee and took phone calls, but it was that close to that era. It was I didn't work with that. It was just afterwards. Failed server, need to migrate NVDIMMs to a new server. This also gets tricky. Your new server may not have the same kind of socket configuration that you need, but if it does, assuming you have one that's exactly the same, you should be able to move DIMMs and reinsert them, paying attention to the same population rules, things like that, that may be useful in some cases, but you probably need some help from the software to tell you what strategy you need to take. So. Repurposing NVDIMMs, if you decide you're done with them in their current use, then you have to worry about the encryption problem, you know, and then, you know, how to clear it, make sure that any sensitive data is gone. Optimization is hard. I talked about NUMA a bit, and there's probably nothing really new on this slide versus what I said already. A lot of the operating systems are already doing a lot of the tricky work with today's NUMA. They will, again, schedule threads to run optimal for the memory. That's really easy to do with volatile memory because you have to make all of those decisions since the last time the system was booted. Anything that was there before is gone after the reboot. It gets a lot more complicated when you have persistent memory. Now you've started an application running, you've got its threads running on the Core 2, you know, or cores on socket 2, which made perfect sense at the time, and then the thing decides to open up a persistent memory file with affinity to Core 1. You know, what do you do? You know, in the case of typical NUMA right now, you're just going to have some non-optimal IOs. You can try to have the application set up, again, using, you know, utilities that are available to set up that affinity ahead of time. So generally, we think that existing tools will suffice with the persistent memory versus volatile memory and Newman now, but the on-socket memory is a brand new headache. It's going to be a real challenge to get that right. So, and optimal. I mean, things will work, but just it'll be trickier to get things optimal. No. Public resources. What's going on with standards and emerging work and all that, and open source. So I have a little chart here of kind of a stack, and you know, just using this as a reference for where the standards are. Again, I don't have I've been loosely following the JEDEC work. I believe that the impact is going to be really combination of where the blue boxes are here and the you know physical access to the DIMMs themselves is where their NVDIMM work is going on. But they're going to be something very important to monitor. I just didn't have public information yet to share. So so they're missing from my discussion here, but they're really a big force. But looking at the top from the kind of a high level user space, there's end user tools, command line tools, XML representation, integration with management libraries, kernel. In the case of Linux, they have the SysFS, ioctls, you know, hooks into the drivers. These are they're you know going to be extended the way they have been for other kinds of devices as ways for management software to figure out what's going on. Out of band, this is through BMCs and you know that kind of communication being done, not through the normal operating system interfaces, but you know you can monitor things even before the OS is even installed. You can monitor things when the system appears to be offline. Jim mentioned this morning that the need for a power reset. So it's one of the other tricks that's provided with VMCs. So IPMI is kind of the way the world is right now, and Redfish is emerging standard for out-of-band interface to servers. Working with that activity to get NVDIMMs plugged into the model. BIOS, ACPI, this was ACPI 6.0 came out earlier this year. Mentioned earlier they introduced NFIT. NFIT, like I said, adds this level of indirection between the physical topology and the logical topology. So if your PMEM devices support this, you can create what appears to be a pool of capacity from multiple, one or multiple NVDIMMs, and divide it up into multiple namespaces. This is not a software construction. This is not software RAID. This is at the BIOS level. This is being done. Once the configuration is done and saved off, there's not a you know there's not like a RAID manager or a you know, partitioning manager going on. Once it's done, it's fairly passive in the firmware. But the you can configure this stuff at the BIOS level, but again, you have options of configuring the stuff from software as well if the devices support it. You don't have to use that, so there's also going to be NVDIMMs that have much simpler, really read-only configurations. Hardware, look at registers, firmware interfaces. You know, it's all part of the fun puzzle here. So for the BIOS work that's going on, I mentioned BIOS tables that describe the NVDIMM resources, the operating system. They actually, this is the same kind of tables that talk about all kinds of hardware, you know, motherboard resources, or system resources, really. So the data structures describing them are put into memory. The operating system can read them. So this has been extended to have multiple kinds of devices for memory, not just one. It also includes, you know, NFIT, this the ability I was just talking about, kind of a level of indirection. DSMs are device-specific methods. There's a link to the examples paper here. So ACPI 6.0 really opened up a lot of functionality related to NVDIMMs at a higher level than what JEDEC is doing at this mostly the level where you'd have interaction with the operating system, though operating systems probably directly be working with some of the JEDEC interfaces as well. At the kernel level, the Linux PMEM driver, which is known as DAX, direct access has gone upstream in kernel 4.0. This whole universe of the BIOS support that I was just talking about, that's pretty well all in place in 4.2 kernel, which is also now upstream. There's going to be patches and tweaks and things like that for a while, but the basic structure is in place. You can use it. As far as I know, there's no standard distros that provide it enabled yet, but, you know, wait a couple weeks and it might have changed. Linux is a very fast-moving community. So this is those of us that are playing with this stuff now, it's not terribly difficult to do a kernel build that enables these features. One of the cool things that's provided there is a little hook. So the BIOS tables I was talking about representing different memory types is the EA20 table. And if you identify yourself as a NVDIMM type, then the Linux with these changes in will just not put your memory into the volatile memory pool. So there's a special syntax for a command line option that says, I want to create a physical memory address range and have you pretend it had an NVDIMM EA20 type. And when you do that, you just have a range of memory. It's really volatile memory. You know it's volatile memory. It's the stuff that was there yesterday. It didn't change any features, but the system treats it. So you get you can use the DAX features, you can mount a file system, you can use mmap. It will not do the paging that Andy had talked about earlier. And you can start looking at how you adapt your software to work with persistent memory until you reboot. Then it's not persistent anymore. But it's still a very useful feature to evaluate how your software works today. The PRD is a Git repo which picks up the kernel and adds emerging work in this area. So Intel is managing this until all of the bits and pieces get in place. But it's very easy to you can grab a tarball from it or a zip file, I guess, or you can use Git and download a copy of this. It's already patched in the not quite approved pieces and get a kernel up and running pretty quickly. The namespace spec is available through pmem.io. That's the same place that the NVML library is. It's just different areas in the same site. There's also the device writer's guide. Low-level Linux only library. This is a little command line tool for some NVDIMM management services, just kind of a starting point. In addition to that, Intel has been defining a experimental standards for SIM-based management. So we worked in two different groups because right now the server side of SIM-based management is done in DMTF, while the storage side is done in SNIA, in SMIS standards. So we realized that it really makes sense to update related stuff in both sides in order to cover this. So there's a read-only model for memory that has been updated to include more information about NUMA topology, because that was just missing in the previous version, but also the possibility that memory might be there. DIMMs might be there, but not part of the volatile memory pool. So it doesn't have all of the configuration choices because, the model there was much simpler before, and we didn't really want to make it that much more complicated. But at least you can recognize that there's this much capacity, and DIMMs are attached to system, but only this much is as part of the volatile memory pool. To understand the rest of it, you have to look at the SNIA models, and those are in two layers. These profiles tend to be small pieces that you piece together depending upon the capabilities of your hardware. So the one of them is just doing the managing the system address map and allocating, the system address map. So basically says how you take your capacity and expose it in as whether it's a block addressable, persistent, byte addressable, persistent, or volatile. So you can do that level of tweaking, and that's about it with that one. The other is around the persistent memory regions, you know, following the same NFIT model that ACPI describes. If you're interested in those, they're emerging, and with anything emerging, kind of, you can get more information if you're an insider. So in 2016, you should be able to see public versions of the SMIS-17 spec, including these profiles, from the same place where all of the in-review SNIA technical specs are, through the URL here. If you're an SMITSG member, this is a working group that deals with the SMI stuff, you can see the emerging work now, and there's actually ballots going on approving and these right now, and there's a URL for those. That would be the latest. I got an older version of this work made public for review several months ago, but as with anything emerging, a lot has changed in that time. So it's significantly different than, really the model is about the same. The names have gone through significant change. People reviewed them and said, I don't like that name, and changed this around. A couple things got combined, but that's available. It's publicly available now. So all those URLs are there. Just a real 1 minute description. I mentioned that Intel is looking at an implementation of this. We have implemented the SIM model. We're kind of going through validation now. But we're really using the same general model outside of SIM as well. So if you look at the CLI that we have, when you look at the CI we have, because it's really not available yet, it will look a lot like the way that the SIM model works. And the idea is that depending upon the context, depending upon the operating system, there's no perfect answer for manageability tools right now. For the software that is SIM-enabled, you know, there's a lot of desire because there's a place where you can drive standards and have discussion. The rest of it just kind of evolves to meet the problem. But at the moment, we're going through several approaches. We're also actively looking at now a Redfish adapt. A few months ago, we didn't know what Redfish was, and I think 6 months ago, probably not much of anybody did. It's become a big force in server management. So we've been monitoring that and realized that's a simpler type of thing. It's much more focused, but we're trying to shoehorn the same model in there and work with that community as well. So trying to drive standards where we can. But like I said, there's going to be cases where there's going to be vendor-specific management. You know, there's just always an aspect of hardware management that really isn't worth standardizing because it's really vendor-specific. Then you kind of get to a layer above that and some generic rules apply. So we anticipate a combination of both of those for a while. So. Any other questions?
All right. So it's about moving things between systems and maintaining their identity. So if you had something which maps on one system to some particular.
Yeah, it's just as much fun as moving a bunch of disks in a RAID group.
Yeah. Obviously, there is metadata on the device itself, which kind of identifies the objects.
Yes, some of the information that is in some of these guides and stuff I said, you know, that reference there talks about how metadata is laid out. Some of the identity information is actually built into the at the hardware level. As well, so there's like IDs that could be used, but it's a kind of a combination of both of those, and along with the population rules that are server specific, and so like I said, if you have a spare copy of a same server that you're pulling the DIMMs out of, chances are pretty good you can repopulate your data. Otherwise, take up backups a lot. So you know, any other questions? All right, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. If you have questions about the material presented in this podcast, be sure and join our developers mailing list by sending an email to developers-subscribe@snia.org. Here you can ask questions and discuss this topic further with your peers in the developer community. For additional information about the Storage Developer Conference, visit storagedeveloper.org.